podcast lands near and far and wide and close. It's me, Cindy Saddleman, here once again with another wonderful Gumbo Cast. On this week's edition of the Gumbo Cast, controversy surrounds HQ all throughout its being. We have the Jeopardy Tournament of Champions roster being released and some backlash with it? Question mark? Also, Harry Friedman gets a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, a revival of Cash Cab, again, and our Just the Strats, Ma'am segment on Press Your Luck. And joining me is the Strats, Ma'am herself, Jessica Brand.
Hello, hello. Boy, have we got some discussion for you, and boy, have we got some ways to exploit things as always. If it can be exploited, it can be profited, I'm here for it, and I will do it, and I will teach you how to do it. And by gosh darn it, you guys listen to this show, you better do it if you get on.
Yes, this is free advice, and it's good advice. Remember,
it's free advice. I'll take my 10% copay, thanks.
Did you know some people used to do that back in the day? Back in the
80s? Yeah. Pyramid originated with Pyramid, who had underground camps. They would actually charge 10% for the $10,000 pyramid of aspiring actors who were often on the show, and they would give little schools of learning and so forth. And basically, I was a block or two from the studio because that way, you know, you could be familiar with the area and so forth. And it wound up working out very well. One of the most famous incidents of this was actually a top box that was won, and it was the first time that they actually went under review. And the clue was, it was a top box, it was things you unwrap. And the clue given was a present. And they said, or actually the box was things you wrap. And the person said things you unwrap, which is opposite, but it also contains the word. So they wound up going under review, and they gave them a new word, and under with the same amount of time left on the clock, and they got it. It's an amazing story. Hmm. Way back in the 70s.
Yeah. In the 80s, they had stuff like that, where there's actually a story out there. I think Mark Richards of Starcade had a little school where he would coach all these prospective contestants and ask for a cut of the money.
Hmm. Interesting.
Which never worked.
Well, no. Not for an arcade game. Like, I know Farmer's Daughter, if you're ever out that way in LA, it's a little bit pricey, but they do Price is Right school all the time. They never ask for a cut. But they may as well with how much the prices are there. I mean, it's a gorgeous hotel. Nothing against them. Yeah. Nothing but good things to say about these guys. Mm-hmm. But if you want practice about good one-bid strategies about how to play the games, again, they're right close by. They're about a block away. So that's still done to this day. And, I mean, my goal is to try to provide that tradition going forward to try to help people. Because I always say, if I help people, I can help myself do well. And, you know, I can help create really... I mean, people are going on these shows, and I know them. So if I do that, then I can just create better shows where people are just absolutely clocking these people. I mean, who doesn't want to see that? We don't want to see people do okay on a game show. We want to see people take them for all they're worth, right?
Mm-hmm. And on that note, we are going to be doing an internet game show next Saturday. On the 20th, myself and Jessica Brand will be on Lou Guru's, a.k.a. Tim Connolly's, Luck of the Draw show, where we'll be competing against one another for charity for our various children's hospitals in the area.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're facing someone who counts cards in blackjack, and I know it's a card-based game, so I wish you luck.
Gee, don't remind me of Countdown.
Oh, yeah, Countdown, too. I wasn't even thinking of Countdown. I'm thinking, like, how I could rip off a casino. Like, y'all ever seen 21 with Kevin Spacey and all them? The MIT, that was based off the MIT accounting yep. cards? Anyone can count cards, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I remember, their system was, if it's a 10 or face, it's plus 1. If it's 2, 3, 4, or 5, it's minus 1. 6, 7, 8, 9 don't mean anything.
Yeah, that's basically called the hard count, and you basically start off with a line of zero, because, you know, if you're neutral, obviously nothing has happened yet, and the cards reflect that, basically. And, of course, now it's a lot harder, because you have automated shufflers, you have multiple decks, but you just really just multiply everything by 7, which is pretty much the industry standard these days in the casinos. It's nothing all that bad. I understand that can be a lot to a lot of people, but I'd like to think my memory's pretty darn good, so.
Right, but as we all know, that strategy is nowhere near as foolproof as people like to think.
Oh, not at all. No, the best case you have from counting cards is about, I believe, like, this is a few years old, and the industry standards have basically remained the same. I think it's like a 10.9% chance of winning increased. I mean, that's nice, but it's not going to guarantee anything. Unlike the movie where they keep going and they keep going and they get comped. And they get all these perks and they get the platinum cards and all this stuff. That's probably not going to happen. I mean, nope. There's a chance where it could happen. If you really start to see a really unlikely series string of cards, like let's say you see like 4 2s in a row or something like that, then you can really take advantage of that. And eventually, but like, no, it's probably not to your advantage to put big amounts of money, or at least having, as they showed in the movie, having a small better and then the large better being the counter. That's nice, but it doesn't work that way in 2019. Just saying.
Not anymore. Because back then, they used to have like a 5-deck or a 6-deck shoe. Now it's a 7 or an 8-deck shoe.
Yeah, which to me is not that bad of a math difference, but it's just, you can't, with that kind of deck, it's easy enough to compute, but it's not easy enough to ultimately count on in terms of victory because of the variance you're throwing in. I mean, literally, you're throwing in at least 18.3% more variance from 6 to 7, let alone 40% more from 5 to 7, so.
Right. And that is just a taste of what you're going to be experiencing when we get to our Price Your Luck segment for Just the Strats, man. Isn't math fun, folks?
My father, I should say this in full disclosure. Why I like numbers is because I've always liked to figure out what advantages are of things. And I mean, some of you might know some of my work that I've done within sports realms professionally and so forth. But if we take advantage, we know numbers and we can find market opportunities, we can find arbitrages opportunities, like things like the yield curve. For those that don't know what the yield curve is, it's basically treasury bond versus treasury bill versus treasury note rates. For like, let's say a 28-day period, a 3-month period versus a year, 5-year, 10-year, for treasury notes, you know, like the things that you don't get much money back on, but you can make money in those pretty easily because, the yield curve is pretty advantageous. Like a few years ago, the 1 year was less than the 3 month in a T bill. So, but my father, was also a big part of it too. He used to work for, rest in peace too, so I can say this now, he used to work for Netflix, Yum Brands, and Sprint. And this is before Netflix just blew up. Like, I mean, he basically made that brand what it is in terms of appealing to the common consumer, so that spreads forward. Small world.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of a small world, we're going to kick things off right now with kind of bouncing off what we talked about last time. We talked about confetti being canceled because things were not going that well. There wasn't many downloads. There wasn't many viewers in America. But after that news broke, we got this from HQ. There was an apparent mutiny to oust their CEO recently. And when that failed, things have just started to go really, really bad. And this is from TechCrunch. Downloads per month, down 92% versus last June. And this is from Sensor Tower. HQ has laid off staff members. One said about 20% was being let go, and another said 6 to 7 employees were departing. That makes HQ staff to fewer than 30, which is now 28 staffers. And this is coming up with their upcoming launch of monthly subscriptions, especially with HQ Words Every Day. This is getting really bad really fast, especially on that end.
Well, I think I'm not concerned about the subscription so much. When you talk about a competitor and a team like Kiwi Incorporated, which runs Joyride, that has been their model for games for the better part of a year and a half now. Not quite that, but close, where you can buy keys and you buy, and with keys, you can not only rejoin a game, but you, if you have X number of keys or half that with a subscription, you can play games for more money. And Joyride is giving about as much money away as HQ. It's not as big pots because they spread it out over a bunch of different games and times and formats, but it's a successful model for them. I can't really hate that. I think if anything, I think it's a solid plan, at least immediately for the short term for the players. The download thing, I think, is interesting, but it doesn't tell the full story. If players already have a given concept, wouldn't you expect by nature for them to be have, maybe not to this extent, but certainly to a certain degree, I don't know what that would be precisely, but if enough players have a certain game that fulfills such a niche, because trivia is one of the genres that the Google Play and the App Store go by, is there really a market anymore for them? Because people have already downloaded it. There's that effect. And to me, I think that caps how many people you can have as an overall percentage. I'm just wondering, of people that are available to get such a game, that people are available that are interested in as much. Well, just in general, trivia, because trivia is not as big as niche as you would think it would be. Especially within the circles of who listens to something like this. I think they're okay in these respects. Trunked House, the high-end staffers, that's been kind of an issue since day one, and I think that's kind of an appeal to some people. You look at, to contrast, we mentioned Confetti a little bit earlier, where it's succeeding, like Mexico, where they do two shows a day. They did a $100,000 game the other day there, in U.S. dollars, not pesos. Twice a day, huge pots. It's over $1 million a show, both times. But these countries didn't have an HQ. It's stable leadership, it's respectful leadership, and it's professional productions. Because let's be honest, HQ might have had the guys behind Vine behind it, with Krall and Yasupov. But these guys have had issues before. I know, I realize one of them is dead now, but I'm talking about the origins here. But we're talking about guys who shot out of a green screen studio, which was the predecessor. Confetti, by contrast, was in Southern California, was in front of an actual giant stage where they could have stunts, where they could have a DJ as they did originally.
Yep.
And that to me is the difference. The staffing thing, I was surprised to hear that it was cut down to under 30, which, you know, I talk about other shows. I don't think other shows really have all that many. That seems like, I mean, I don't want to see anybody lose their job, certainly not. But I feel like that's a lot more staffers than you would expect for an operation of that size. Just in
Well,
general.
right, but you're also taking into consideration that HQ Trivia runs multiple games at a time.
No, not really. I mean,
Not anymore.
no. So the schedule for HQ these days, you have the trivia 9 Eastern, that's every night. You have HQ Sports, which is Monday and Wednesday at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, and then you have Words currently Tuesday and Thursday at 9:30 Eastern. That's it. They really don't run that much anymore.
Right, and a lot of the staff is working 7 days a week. Sure, they're still cranking out all these questions that they have to research. I mean,
Yeah,
this.
most of the time. I've noticed a trend with them about, because I mean I'm playing, I'll be honest, I play late in games quite a bit, but a lot of times their questions are very interestingly similar to one another. They really don't do as much research as they used to as it goes into questions, and again, that's not to disparage the writers. They have to do probably like 18 questions a day now, which is, you know, back in the day they used to do 24, so I guess it's about the same amount, but like a lot of them are the person who inspired this painting, song, whatever, was also someone who wrote what, or like they'll ask like which of these has the most ownership of a, like this is a real one, the largest territory in Antarctica and the smallest one. So they'll try to go with quite literally polar opposites in this case, but it's stuff that really isn't too hard to manage, surprisingly. I think they do a very good job with making it difficult, perhaps a little bit too much so on the themes these days. I hate the theme nights these days because they're so niche on top of it all. Like, I mean, I could deal with a regular theme night. I get that, but
And part of this
it's just
demise.
unfortunate.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate to see that because what they're doing, and I got to give them credit in this respect, is that historically the theme nights and currently as well, the theme nights will get a few hundred thousand more people that they would normally get on a given night, because normally they get about 250,000 people to play Question One if it's a standard trivia night. If it's a theme night with the popular following, like let's say Disney or The Office, Harry Potter, then they might get almost double that. Almost. And they can go so niche with it because it's remarkable, really, but they'll go so niche with it that nobody can really be expected to answer what they're asking on a wide scale basis. I mean, it's doable. I've done it enough times. They did SpongeBob, of all things, the other day, which they asked, like, what SpongeBob's first words were for a sample question. Do you know what those are? Not on the show, but what his first words were as a baby. And that's canonical. Yeah, 10 seconds. Do, 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 do,
God.
do, 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 do.
Krabby Patty?
Nope. It's May I Take Your Order, which is a one specific line in the first ever episode. I mean, I'm Ready was a fake on top of that, too, because, again, this was like question eight. That's one of their simpler questions that they could ask for a theme. I mean, I don't mind the difficulty. I maintain that good, difficult, noble trivia, like which of these countries does not border this, or which of these capital cities of countries does not border this country? That's doable. I can recall capitals in my sleep. I realize that's not everybody for sure, but it's like the elite players can certainly answer that. As much as HQ would like to not believe that elite players can answer questions, that's for sure. They've taken away $820 away from me last year, which is very unfortunate. And I knew this would be a story eventually, as it has been, with what's been going on, because they didn't award any of the $100,000 as of September 14th, 2019, to the five people who won $100,000 in a June jackpot game of 25 questions. Remarkable. And that's what I don't understand about HQ either. This is what bothers me about them than anything else. They seem to think that good people at trivia are not winning it legitimately. And I'll be the first to say that there are loads of bots that play every single game. And
Yep.
that's unfortunate. It sucks. It does. But, you know, some people are going to be that good. That's literally the definition of a normative distributed bell curve of intelligence. Or just, even if you apply that to maybe a parallel. It's obviously not direct, but a parallel of trivia. Oh, come on, guys. I didn't cheat. I will tell you what I did flat out. I did have somebody, and I didn't have, I was not artificially generated. I did have somebody, because I had an Android. Initially, the Android phone could not do the swipe trick. And the swipe trick is where you would swipe up on the heart icon to your avatar to get a life once every week. Now it's a code you enter once every month. But back in the day, you swipe trick it for once a month. I mean, once a week. And I had someone do that for me because it's like, oh, it's on Android. I can't do that. Why should the iOS players get the advantage? So I'm like, okay, let's make this even and just someone have use an iPhone just to keep it fair, right? And then September 9th, last year, I get 15 bots out of absolutely nowhere. I have no idea why, spamming me lives. But I keep on winning. I keep crushing the game. I won a $385 game that only 65 people, and my money got wiped. There was no reason for it whatsoever. I mean, you could see me using someone else's phone for swiping as maybe a problem, but I never used a bot. I never did anything that would give me an advantage over any iPhone user ever. And I'm so frustrated by that. That is still going on, obviously, with people waiting for their $20,000 who have not done anything wrong, and they just suspect these people are cheating. The worst thing about this, too, I think, is that you had somebody in that group of the five who had won the Rampage game, which was a $300,000 game last year for the movie Rampage with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He won about $3,800 that game. Awesome. He also won about $2,500 a few weeks before this, and there were no issues. Awesome. He wins this $20,000, and he's won big too much. So, no, you don't get the money at all. My personal hypothesis is, and it's only that, is that you can only have so many big wins as defined by the game. I maintain that I will go for the big money whenever possible because I don't have many big wins right now. And I want to make sure it stays clean like that because, you know, that way they can't call me out on that prospective reason. It's unbelievable, though. There has been one app that's kind of like this. This is not unique to this app. The other one doesn't get as much flack nearly because it doesn't award the size prizes that this does. But the queue has had issues with this where it doesn't pay its winners. It locks them out because it says people are cheating when that's not the case. This is something that Mark Cuban of, the Shark Tank, invested his money into this. He's not a founder, because I used to think that I got that wrong all the time. But he supported this mess. But why can't these people pay their money? I understand if you're hurting for money. I really do. But this is some shit. This is some rigging contest stuff. Like, you can't, if you're going to offer people money to know these questions, and they're not, I mean, the ones that were won on the 20,000 one was not that terrible, let's be honest. I mean, it basically asked, which of these state flowers does not have the name, it was some adjective in it. But, you know, that's an incredibly easy question. Just to know that for $20,000? Really? Like, I mean, you just have to, I mean, let's be honest, Googling is not cheating. I don't want to hear anybody say Googling is cheating. Because HQ endorsed it. But you can just Google state flower, whatever it is, and then just go from there. Oh, yeah, like, I mean, that's so simple. I mean, they've adjusted to that. They have overcompensated for that, I'd even argue. Like, tonight gave out less than $4,000. It was a movie musical theme tonight. It wasn't actually that terrible. But, I mean, you know, like, let's look at some sample questions for tonight, for instance. I didn't think they were that bad, but, you know, some people might. So here we go. Let's see. What's this one?
And I'd like to tell everybody that I don't play these app games. I don't have a phone or anything that will allow me to play these app games.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing these questions for the first time. We'll answer a couple of these questions, and there's a little bit more to the story that I think is more interesting.
Yeah, there is, and it's, like, I mean, here is one that I think was very hard today. This is the one I went out on, because I ran out of time by a second. I would say I play these as much as you can, because I use the term pretty liberally here, but professionally, I would say. I've made about $10,000 from playing essentially free apps. I do pay a little bit so I can get the most opportunities to play them and so forth, but, you know, I have beaten the companies pretty soundly, like a poor pinata on their heads, so.
Ouch.
Anyway. Which of these was Lady Gaga wearing during her famous quote-unquote no makeup screen test for A Star Is Born? Sunscreen, lip balm, or brow gel?
Lip balm?
Yeah, that is it. That is it.
Wow.
But, I mean, that's just crazy, isn't it? So, let's see, here's a... Okay.
So the one that you wasn't went...
movie theme, but...
So the one you went out on, I got right quick.
You got right quick, but I'm always really making sure about things. I never will tap an answer with, like, 8 seconds left. I will try to do it with, like, three or less. Just because, you know, you can verify things, and you can... Mm-hmm. And you can make sure... you can replay things in your own mind to make sure you have them right, if you do know them. Because there was a question the other day that asked, what Forrest Gump and his son were watching on the TV in the movie Forrest Gump?
Sesame Street.
Jesus. Yes. Yeah, I knew it was Bert and Ernie. Because they put it as Bert and Ernie. But, like, I remember the scene very well. But, yeah. Yeah. Very good. Here's some questions about what... Here's some good examples of standard second half, because it's of 30 questions now, up from 25 of what they'd ask. Which country's capital city is closest to the equator? Kenya, Rwanda, or Uganda?
Rwanda.
No, this one's Uganda. It is actually, and I knew, obviously, Quito of Ecuador is the closest, but Uganda is it's at 1 degree south. If you know that, that does help.
Yeah.
All right, so there's one that I think this is probably the hardest one in the game. The last film nominated for every Oscar it was eligible for derives its name from what? Hansel and Gretel, Little Red Riding Hood, The Three Pigs.
The Three Pigs.
I gotta say, your hit rate is very good. That I am impressed.
And The Three Pigs, I think... I'm trying to remember the movie.
Yeah, I actually don't know what movie this was, because I actually didn't hear her. But if you know, say in the comments below. I would love to hear it. And what ones it was nominated for, because was it like a one out of one? Like, please let me know.
Alright, but to continue on with the story, a lot of the blame is being put on Russ Yusupov? Mainly because after his co-partner died, Yusupov didn't know how to manage it. Because there was a petition to remove him, he caught wind of it and fired two of the leaders of the movement. HQ's board decided to bring in a new CEO. They're still trying to find a new CEO. And now Yusupov is just kind of... He's kind of phoned it in, so to speak. Because he's not doing anything. Everything's just become, according to TechCrunch, has become more stagnant.
Yeah, I mean, there was supposed to be a show with I forget what it's called, but there was supposed to be a show that basically focused Sharon Carpenter on, like, HQ Buzz, it was supposed to be called. It was supposed to be about celebrities and so forth. There were 8 different proposed HQ shows that got leaked around the beginning of the year, and absolutely none of them have come to fruition. That's kind of unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. And I think what's happening is we talked about this last time that the bubble might be bursting, and the ones that aren't self-solvent right now are going to go away.
Yeah, what's self-solvent right now? Joyride and SB Live for Swagbucks game right now? I think those are the primary ones that come to mind.
Yeah, I think those are the only two right now.
Yeah, you know, like the other ones are trying to expand their reach, like you talk about what Telly or what was formerly called Ripcord is trying to do. Reward the Fan has its own infrastructure. Wincredible has the backing of Publishers Clearinghouse, but that's kind of broken right now. Same cheating guy keeps winning. And it's a winner take all, too. So one big cheater does really shift that. Spotus might be sustainable because it barely gives out any money per game in totality. But I'm just wondering why these haven't been proposed for TV more than they have, because I remember we heard that about HQ about a year ago, about, hey, they might move it to TV to try to get more eyes on what's a declining medium in television as a whole. So they did the Apple Connect, and then they kind of abandoned, really, the updates for that. I mean, what a mess. Come on.
Yeah, guys, if you're going to innovate all
the way. Yeah.
It's just a matter of they expanded too fast, in my opinion.
Well, they weren't prepared for it either, honestly. I think beyond their own control. They didn't know what was going to happen if they had a successful product. Because when you start banning legitimate players, the people that are probably going to be the backbone of your community, that's not really good for word-of-mouth communication, which you have to have these days with younger demographics.
And especially when you have... when you make an entire community mad, and they've done it with 2 communities, you made the trivia players mad because some of them aren't, especially the big players like Alex Jacob and 8 Minky, aren't getting paid.
Well, yeah, that's where I come in. I mean, that's my part. I'm part of that group, which is like, what the fuck, you guys? Come on. This is not hard.
And then what they're doing is they've made gamers angry because they haven't evolved. It's still the same thing that has been since the beginning. And well, also,
I would not say that. I would not say that. I don't think that's accurate. I think they need to develop into different formats, but the deal or no deal thing is relatively new.
What I'm saying is the bot problem is still a gigantic issue.
There's something to that, though. I think HQ doesn't want to admit this, because if you took out all the bots in a given night, I don't think they would reach 50,000 players. I really don't. And you want to try to make it look like you're still by far the best in the business for getting people?
Mm-hmm.
Those bots, they can just kick and they cannot pay them, so they can save money by not paying them, and they can artificially increase their numbers with them. There's no reason to remove those bots if I'm in HQ. Is it dirty? You bet. But do I do it? You bet. I think the big issue with a lot of people, I completely disagree with these people, but they're out there. People are saying that they don't like the format of the jackpot, that they want 12 or 15 questions. Which is kind of silly, really, because, you know, you can ultimately still cash out after your 12 or your 15 if you like and be done with the game. And the prizes were so small before this, it basically was no different. So I never understood people's issues with that. But that's a growing contingent that people are saying, oh, it's too hard now. Ooh, it's too many questions. Again, I don't agree with them, but they're out there, and that's turning people off. And there are many tweets that say, unless you change your format, I will delete your app. Yikes. But I get why they do it. It saves the money. And, yeah, I mean, it benefits the super players, theoretically, at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is just the start of it with HQ. I'm pretty sure there's going to be more news stories that are going to come out. Maybe when they get a new CEO, they'll be able to right the ship. Because right now, Yusupov is not getting it done. And with the way he's doing things, according to these reports, HQ's morale is trash. Well, hopefully...
Yeah, it's been that way for a year, at least. A long while.
But it's just... Yeah, but has it gotten that... But it's probably gotten worse.
Probably worse, honestly. There are people that have been screaming at Scott when he was host. There have been female employees been being treated as subhuman, even when the app was in its heyday. Honestly, it's like comparing like cancer to AIDS here, but I don't think it's really anything that's changed in terms of the morality. It's still awful, but I think it's been as bad as it's ever been. I don't think that's really much changed much.
And a lot of that has to do with the tech and industry, but that's another topic for another day. We talked about Alex Jacob, who was a Jeopardy Tournament Champions winner. Now, let's talk about the new Tournament of Champions that's going to be coming out, airing November 4th through the 15th. Gird your loins, everybody. It's time to run down the names. You ready for this? We start with James Holzhauer. We knew he was going to come back. And then, in my opinion, we got one of the best players that nobody's talking about, and that's Josh Hill. Mr. Tiger Claw himself. Then we got Ryan Fenster from Season 34 and Kyle Jones from Season 35. All three of those I just listed are your seven-game winners. Rob Warman, season 34, $133,900 total winnings, six-game winner. Then you have five-game winners, Alan Dunn and Stephen Grade from season 35. Then you have other five-game winners who didn't win as much as they did, Gilbert Collins and Rachel Lindgren, both five-game winners. Gilbert Collins winning $84,201 and Rachel Lindgren $75,999. who has the lowest amount of money in the tournament, but has the 5 wins. Then we have a couple of 4-game winners, Eric R. Backus, Aneka Garcia, and Lindsay Schultz. All of them won over $100,000 in their 4-day runs. We have season 34 college champion Dhruv Garg, and teacher's champion, the first teacher's champion, the most recent teacher's champion, Francois Barcombe, because the one before him unfortunately passed away. But then we get the news that Emma Betcher is going to be in the tournament. 3-win champion, $97,002. People went nuts when Emma's name popped up as being in the tournament. And the reason is she shouldn't be in because she only won 3 games. Despite the amount of money that she won. And I think there's a little bit of credit to that side, because under normal circumstances, and they said this in the video when they announced the tournament roster, she wouldn't have gotten in. And because of that, the 4-time champions, all the 4-time champions who won less than her, are going to be in the running for the next tournament champion. So I'll have to wait 2 years for the next tournament. Or it might be 1 year, depending on how things shake out. So what do you think of that announcement, and what do you think about the roster for the Tournament of Champions this year?
I think Jackie Fuchs is the one that got denied because of this. Yep. I know some people have had some issues with that. I mean, I think and nothing against Emma, because I like her as a player. But I mean, honestly, you got to admit, to see Emma versus James again would make amazing play. Let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I am more surprised, if anything, by the fact they did a regular Tournament of Champions. Is it a lock James wins? Of course not. Is it almost assured he does? Yes. I think that is a missed opportunity for the show. It doesn't help they just did All-Stars, honestly.
No, because they taped the All-Star games way before Holzhauer happened.
Exactly, so it's like... But, I mean, the reason that doesn't help is because... How often do they do, like, reunion games that aren't just the traditional Tournament of Champions? Like, they almost never will do that.
No, I think the last time that they did something like that, that was a reunion game, you have to go back to the 10th anniversary games that they had, which is just a week of shows, and they paid out the biggest winner a bonus $10,000, and that was Frank Spangenberg. Ugh. But it wasn't a tournament.
I mean, I think that's just what it is, though. Like, it's just unprecedented to have 2 big reunion games back-to-back like that. Or a series, I guess, is more appropriate. But, I mean, I don't mind bringing Emma back. I think it's the best way to get the most TV. Because it's fueling controversy. Which is, I mean, it's not that people are not going to watch over this. But, you know, I mean, people are going to watch because they're going to have a point to talk about Jeopardy now. I mean, mm-hmm. even within the big game, the small game show circles. And again, people would recognize who beat James. That was a big national story everywhere. I think that's the right call from the perspective of just making television. If your audience is going to talk about it before it even tapes, you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you won Fuchs because you won... She won more games. I mean, I guess I can get that, but wouldn't you rather have more drama-inviting discussion television from a production perspective? I know I would. Harry Friedman made the right... Or what, I'm just going to say Harry Friedman or whoever's applicable, but the right choice was made, I think, ultimately. Yeah.
I think Friedman's the EP of Jeopardy, so everything kind of has to go through him.
Yeah.
I think he made the right decision as well. because if Emma wasn't there, then everybody would say, oh, Nobisa Tuden Holzhauer is going to win this in a walk. But as you pointed out, I don't think that's going to happen either. Because I'm looking at some of these names. Josh Hill is the one to look out for. Because he has an outside shot to win this.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's so probably who I would expect to take so.
Yeah. So does Drew Gar and Francois Barcombe, even though I think Francois has the biggest disadvantage in the whole tournament because reflexes.
Yeah, reflexes are huge. That's one thing I've wanted to see, what happens to a guy like James when he's facing players who are actually very good on the signaling device and have the experience with it. Like, because a lot of times he was facing, I mean, basically every time he was first time play. I mean, people don't talk about that a whole lot as an advantage of being the returning champion, aside from like the studio and the ambiance, if that applies to you. It doesn't always. But to know when the lights are going to go on, that is a tremendous advantage for a champion. But if they're all going to have that advantage, it neutralizes James's game quite a bit, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And here's another thing that might neutralize James's game. Everybody now knows the strategy.
Because... yeah, that's true. I'm wondering how many people can do it, but a Tournament of Champions is by far the best opportunity to find that out for sure.
I think Josh Hill can do it. I think Stephen Grade can do it. We definitely know Emma can do it. I think Drew Gar can do it. Let me pose this question to you, because there is a little bit of a thing that happened, because the recent team championship winner was asked, why aren't you in the Tournament of Champions? Quite simply, they don't allow him to be in the Tournament of Champions. They don't allow team tournament winners to be in the Tournament of Champions.
I don't know why that. I don't understand the point of changing that. I just do not.
Well, the thing is, they used to allow the team tournament winners in the Tournament of Champions.
Yeah, I don't understand the point of. I don't understand why that wasn't the case. I mean, we even in All Stars we had a team tournament champion winner in there. There's precedent for them playing beyond that. That's mm-hmm. kind of frustrating.
I would say if the team tournament winner has enough credibility, put them in.
I agree with that. Heck, I would even go so far as the kid ones, honestly. It's rare, certainly, but that's just, but you know, rare doesn't mean non-existent.
Well, then you're kind of getting into something a bit different with the kids, because kids only play one. The kids' games only do one game. Whereas,
yeah, I wish they would do more with the kids.
Yeah, but that's a personal thing. They're not doing any more kids' games because they stopped them back in 2014 after Emancipation Proclamation. So they stopped doing that.
Yeah, that doesn't apply. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think they did that because now that tournaments are now spread out once every 2 years rather than just being once a year. And so they can no longer have team tournament winners. But if I were to do that, I would allow them in. Lindsay Schultz and Eka Garcia, I would put the team tournament winners in over a four-time champion.
You know, I think it all depends on, at least personally speaking, I would like to see it based on things like Corey out and so forth, but that they don't obviously do that. So
nope. But we'll take a look at the tournaments when it airs on the 4th through the 15th, and that's going to be get your popcorn, get your DVR ready. It's going to be one hell of a time on Jeopardy.
It's going to be a good show. I always love the difficult clues, because, again, I always love a difficult trivia challenge, but hopefully the site I use that uses response time and so forth to try to project tournament winners is doing it again soon. Because they're second to none about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll keep updates as we're going with that.
Alright, and we'll have updates on the next GumboCast. But speaking of Jeopardy, it's executive producer Harry Friedman, also the executive producer Wheel of Fortune. His big news is that he actually got his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He is going to be in the 2020 class, and he will have his star after being nominated in 2017, after almost three decades of service to game shows like Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy, among others. And I gotta say, it's well-deserved.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in this day and age, how many shows can you say that have lasted 20 or so years at the top of their respective airings? I mean, in Harry's case, it's syndicated shows, but that remains impressive to innovate like that and have it be a success still with major audiences at the top of the list.
Absolutely. I mean, aside from Judge Judy, Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune are usually 1 and 2.
Yeah, usually. I mean, you talk about Family Feud, which is the new entrance into this mix. But considering Friedman started, Family Feud was off the air. I mean,
yeah, Friedman got in, like, what, 96?
That was my thought. I thought 95, 96, something around that time, yeah. But that's what it just is, though.
Yeah. I remember one of his first gigs and how terrible it was. I'm just thankful he got work after that, because he used to work for Scott Sternberg.
Oh.
Who, in my opinion, hasn't made a good game show to save his life. And don't give me That's the Question or Catch 21, because Catch 21 is Merrill Heater. That's the Question was a import show.
I say that's not original content. I can't judge on that either way, so.
And I just don't have much to say, because I am not deep into the Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy backstories and all that good stuff. He has been the steady hand to keep everything going. And I know Jason Block of Game Show News Net had done a great interview with Harry Friedman a couple years ago, which is still a good listening.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I find interesting is I talk about Wheel more than Jeopardy, but consider what the creativity you get. All right, also with Jeopardy, what the creativity Jeopardy's done with its tournaments under Friedman. The Ultimate Tournament of Champions, the All-Stars, his unique format, certainly, the Battle of the Decades, just to name a few. Wheel, when it started under Friedman, was just the three or four rounds with a couple prizes added on, and then you pick one of these prizes from the WAKEO. Now you have a bonus wheel, you have a prize attached that is an easy sponsorship but gives people more winnings, you have the Express, you
have jumping puzzles.
Yeah. You had the Puzzler, I mean, back in the day, certainly not anymore. But there has been so much that has changed under Friedman, and yet the formats are very recognizable through it all. That's the great thing, too. It's seamless changes. The toss-ups. I forgot about toss-ups.
Yeah, that's what I meant with the jump-ins.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. But wow. Like when you see shows before Friedman, in both cases, you think about what a different era it was, and all these things, but you can recognize the gameplay is the same. That is so hard to do when you think about it. For any show. That's why it's impressive. Let alone stalwarts like this that had been on the air like 20, excuse me, that had been on the air like 15, 20 years beforehand.
Yep, Jeopardy in 84. We're just going to talk current runs. Jeopardy in 84, yeah, Wheel of Fortune 75.
Yeah.
And I just have to say that a lot of shows have learned recently from Harry Friedman, because if you take a look at Feud, who kind of took that 2000 when they brought in Steve Harvey and that set upgrade, it was like a whole new, it was like recognizing the past but bringing more modern day nuances to it. Saw that with Price is Right when Mike Richards came on, and also Let's Make a Deals revival when they had Wayne Brady become the host, and they decided to make it more of an improv variety show than, you know, just a straight, hey, let's make a deal, pick one of these, yada, yada, yada. So they kind of took Harry's improving the show, but not changing the core dynamic.
Yeah. And I think there's reason to think that would continue, certainly, because, of course, with Mike Richards being hired by Sony, so...
It's just going to be a bigger evolution once Harry Friedman decides to retire, if he retires.
Oh, yeah.
But suffice to say, they have the number one and number two EPs right now at Sony.
Yeah, that was such an incredible hire to get both of those guys. Unbelievable.
Yep.
And out of nowhere, too. Like, no one would have guessed that a few months ago that this was going to happen.
Not at all. So, congratulations, Harry.
Very much congratulations. And here's to, not that it's not been great already, but here's to bigger and better things, you know?
Yep. And now we get to just the strats, ma'am. In this segment, we break down various things in the world of game shows to help you win bigger on game shows if you get on them. And who better to talk about it than Jessica Brand? Jessica, what game show are we going to be talking about today?
Well, today we're going to talk about the greatest game of your lives. It's Press Your Luck.
Hooray!
Yeah, Press Your Luck. We can't fully Larson this today, unfortunately, but there are a lot of strats that we can use to try to take advantage of really what's the main game, and it relates to the end game too, because the flaws with Press Your Luck are apparent across rounds, so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, if we talk about why we're making, like, let's say we're breaking bread, right? And we cut off the ends of the loaf every time we do it. And we find out that, hey, we cut off loaves because back in the day, you had to cut off the ends of the loaves, or the bread couldn't fit in the oven. But Press Your Luck is kind of like that, where we cut off the loaf still because we still want to fit it back to the time that was set originally in the 80s. So we still have 80s flaws in 2019. Once that whammy fixed, but Press Your Luck, the revival hasn't. So
explain about that, the flaws that whammy fixed that the current Press Your Luck has. So elaborate on that.
Yeah, I will. That's part of how we take advantage as well. So number one, this one is pretty obvious, but it's important as we get into things. Number one, every space on the board is only going to have three outcomes. You know, with the slide projectors. Could have made it a lot more. You can have prizes move around the board. They didn't do it. But it's just as easy to figure out where whammy is and so forth because of the three slide pattern. So we have a board layout that we can memorize as much. Mm-hmm. Right? So yep. That ties into number two. Whammy fixed the fact that all the spaces change at the same time. This version doesn't. And basically, you can count how many whammies there are on the board. And you couldn't, obviously, on whammy, because it was changing constantly at different parts of the board. But this is a unilateral movement by this big board. So why not take advantage of that? So, we have to realize that we have to stop it, of course, in a reasonable time.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no whammies on the board for a while, that so far has only happened one every 50 slides. But it is doable, so you could take forever if you wanted to. So, I think they would probably say something if you recognize that it's every 50 times.
Right.
So,
and
yeah.
That would be a lot of editing. But that has happened. That is a valid strategy.
There's more than that, though.
I think it was Jason Hernandez's site who actually used that strategy on the original show back in 1984. And I think this contestant named Rick was I think it was a little after Larson. But he noted that he stopped when there was only like one or two whammies on the board. Because he figured on average there's three or four of them.
Yeah.
So when it got to none, one, or two, he just stopped.
Exactly. So on this version, with 0-1 whammies, with 0-1 whammies, or with two or fewer, within 10 switches of the board, that's 90.7% of the time, and 14 over 99% of the time. So just wait for the board to flip 14 times, and you're basically not going to hit a whammy if you can actually pay attention. So that means there's an average of 1.12 whammies when you hit the buzzer, which is a whammy rate of 6.27%. Instead of one every six spins, which is, you know, consonant with the old show, you're hitting a whammy once every 16 spins. And 6 over 16, of course, is going to be equal to 2.67 to 1 rate. You realize what that's done. You've essentially given... You've given yourself... Give me a sec here. Be very quick. You've essentially given yourself 10.68 whammies compared to everyone else's 4, based upon what you're doing there.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the flaw, though. I think it's fixable by most people, but it's human-related. What is the transition time between the board, and how fast can a given person, be it me, you, or anyone else, do that? The transition time between the board is 4/5 of a second. Thankfully, the whammies, you know, they're bright yellow, they're bright red. You can count them faster than you would most digits, or most prizes for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, that is a very tough ask to do. But of course, we talked about James Holzhauer and the signaling device. That is something you can easily practice at home. You don't even have to care where it lands when you're practicing at home. You just have to make sure you get the timing right. So, there's another strategy within this. And again, it applies back to the 1980s pressure lock. So of course, with the slide transitions, you have to change the slide that was on the square. Now you don't have to, though. But a square can't show the same thing twice in a row. It kind of relates to the first one, I know. But that means if a whammy is on a square, that means when the board flips, the whammy is gone. And only one square in each of the first two rounds contain multiple whammies. Any other square?
Square 7 is one of them.
Yes, that's correct. This one's a lot easier. So if you can count the number of whammies within 0.8 seconds, that gives you another 0.8 second to press the button once you see the board. Very doable. So here's what I would do in short, basically, if you want to actually execute this. Because right now this is just game theory. This is not execution. So if in the first 5 board flips you see 5 or more whammies, you want to hit the board after the next transition. Otherwise, hit it after 4 or more. If you use this, you'll hit the button within 10 flips 90% of the time. This decreases the whammies from 16.54 to 11.46, which is 1.872, which isn't quite the same. It's quite a bit better than 1 and 6, essentially. And now for round 2. Remember, that was a round 1. So we're going to add a new strategy in. We count 5 or more on the first 8 boards, stop on the next one. After 8, drop it to 4. This basically allows you to hit within 10 flips 90% of the time and drops the whammy rate to 18.37% to 13.17%, or 7.6 to 1. Yes, it's disappointing that it's not Larson. I get that. I understand that. But this is pretty cool, isn't it? If you're hitting whammies 40% less than your opponent's, you're pretty good. 40% advantage over Joe Schmo and Jane Doe. What's not to like about that?
I can't think of much, but I'd also like to add this caveat to the strategy. People also need to know that the board patterns that you see on the show right now, if there is a season 2... might not necessarily be... Yeah. Oh, it has been renewed.
Yeah, it got renewed before it aired, yeah.
Hooray! Those patterns might go away, and new patterns might be on the board, but the patterns that Jessica has been talking about can still be there. Now, something that I want to talk about is how the bonus round works. Now, it is quite similar to the way the board pattern works on Whammy. Especially round 1. The further you go along, the more whammies are going to be on the board. Now, if you take a look at the first round of the bonus game, you're not going to see that many on the board. It might be a little bit less than round one, actually, on the game. I think there's only about 7 squares that have whammies on the board. Normally, there's 9. But the further you get along, the more whammies are going to be on the board. I think if my count is right, but it's usually wrong, the round one board is 7. Round 2 has 8 or 9. Round 3, 9 or 10. Round 4, 10 to 12. Round 5, 11 to 13. And the Big Bucks Bonanza has around 13 to 15 whammies. And some of those are two to a square. And in that bonus round, there is only one, and sometimes in the bonus game, there's only one square that will never have a whammy in it, and that's the big one.
Which is kind of nice, honestly. That actually, it sounds weird, but that is to a player's advantage to know, to see such a board, because you know that most of those whammies are not going to be there on the next slide. So, the vast majority of them. Obviously, some will, because they're, as you say, they're going to be two square whammies. But obviously, it can't be all or even the majority of them based upon your counts. And even if they're off a little bit, that still holds true.
Right, because I think at most, you could probably do 17 whammies with... I think there's quite a few. I think about 2 or 3 squares have 2 whammies in them in the Big Bucks Bonanza.
Yeah, I got to study the Big Bucks Bonanza a little bit more. This is a good strategy about how you win the main game. Don't take this for the Big Bucks Bonanza. So,
right.
But
Jess's strategy is for the front game. My strategy is the bonus game. Also, when you get to the Big Bucks Bonanza, always pay attention to your whammy count. And also of note, know that there are squares with loose whammies. There are none in the first half of the game. So, and here's something that I kind of want to start to see happening in the front game. In round one, don't be afraid to be cutthroat.
Interesting. I think it depends where your opponents score and how you do on the questions. Historically, when I've played, granted, this is like let's say PC games that might not necessarily use patterns, or they might not use solo synchric boards.
Mm-hmm.
But I will take one spin, and I will pass it because people I find are too aggressive in round one, and they tend to. And of course, this is different than the actual show. But people were too aggressive in round one, when chances are you're going to hit a whammy at some point between round one and round two anyway. And if you can minimize your whammy count, but still have something, then you have a chance to go later by putting yourself at very little opportunity cost at that point.
Exactly.
I think you can be aggressive on the real show, though. I should say there is that difference. Mm-hmm. The real show, you should be aggressive because the patterns are so... The patterns of how the board transitions are incredibly simple to point out.
I would also add that this is one of the reasons why Melanie won her game. Not only because of good luck, is because her opponent also strategized this poorly. She was in second place and had 7 spins. Very rarely are you going to get past 7 spins and not hit a whammy.
Although, if you follow my strategy, theoretically, you should. But most people won't, so...
No. But, so, if you're in second place, and you're the last person, and you're in the last person to play, and your opponent has 3, pass him, because there's a bonus game, you can make your money in the bonus game. Is it a guarantee that you'll make money in the bonus game? No, it's not a guarantee. But, you're more than likely going to walk away the winner. Now, this is not foolproof. Let me say that before. Because on the previous shows, people have passed big amounts of spins, 7 spins or 8 spins, and have survived. One of my favorite moments from the original show is a guy by the name of Michael, who was past 8. And this was back when they had 36 patterns for the lights. And they were random. And he had 3 whammies all throughout round 2. And he survived. And I think was the he's the second highest one-day winner of the original run. Because he won, like, with $32,380.
That's crazy, though. Can you imagine if that happened now? That would be everywhere.
What, 8 spins avoiding? 8
spins passed, win the game, and not whammy.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good place to wrap a bow on this segment. Next time out, we're going to stay with the summer theme and talk about some card sharks. Is that fine with you, Jess?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're gonna treat this ace on high right now. I mean, I have some stuff that I've done with Markov probability simulators that we're gonna get into some pretty technical shit. But I mean, y'all got your thinking caps on, and I think you'll be all right. Absolutely. Markov simulators are 10,000 simulations, guys. So we're prepared.
Oh yeah, we're more than just pretty faces here at Game Show Gumbo and the Gumbo Cast. We know our stuff.
Yes, we want to help you win. Like I mean, honestly, one thing I would love to do with this segment is if somehow my strategies or something I said changed how you saw a game, or better yet, it changed how you played or won a game, that would be fantastic. Please tell me about that. And let me know how it goes and what people say, because I guarantee you, not many people would think to approach these matters like this.
Right.
Especially not for card jerks. Card jerks, I'm going to say, right off the bat, is counterintuitive in how you play it. So
it's all about the game and how you play it. Oh, I can't say that. We might get copyrighted. Anyway, we have one last piece of news that we want to bring on to you. And that has to do with a show that premiered well, got canceled, got revived, got canceled, and revived again. Now, this doesn't happen that often. It happened with Let's Make a Deal during its original run, even though it had 5 revivals since then. Family Feud has had 2 revivals since then. So Family Feud would kind of be the counterpoint. But it has to do with Cash Cab. It has been revived again, and it will be on Bravo this time around. And this, I think, is an interesting pairing with the revival Blind Date, which I think is interesting. We're starting to see more dating shows come back into the fold.
Yeah, I could see so. I mean, honestly, I'm surprised they don't have more, like YouTube celebrity meetups or something like that. Like, you could have all kinds of possibilities with what people are like these days and personalities and how people are really divided now. I'm surprised that's not been taken advantage of.
Right. But getting back to Cash Cab, apparently there's going to be some changes.
Okay.
Because it's going to be on Bravo instead of Discovery. According to the Variety article, Cash Cab will feature an upgraded car, and there'll be more pop culture questions than, you know, like the really hard knowledge that was in the original show.
And
to me, I think that's going to bring in a lot of people that might have felt alienated with the Discovery version. Because sure, the questions might be a bit will be easier than the Discovery version, but normal people are going to watch that and say, "Hey, I knew that."
Yeah, Cash Cab has some modern recognition a little bit by modern audiences, so I think people will like it. I really do.
And the best news of all, Ben Bailey's coming back.
Thank goodness. That I think people recognize Ben Bailey more than anything else about the show, at least from what I understand.
Mm-hmm. And I gotta say this about Ben Bailey. He might be one of the best specific show hosts that we've seen in a long time.
I can't say I disagree with that. I think he's probably the most underrated host we have this decade across any network or any show for that matter. I mean, for a while now, like, he's up there with, I think, Tom Kennedy all time. We're just saying something.
Really? So. You'd put him up there with Tom Kennedy?
Well, with most underrated host, yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Well, to me, the most underrated of all time has got to be Jeff Edwards.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, that, yeah. I always have Edwards high, but I think you're right in national parlance, yeah. Good call.
But I do agree with you, Bailey is up there with Tom Kent. Albeit, agree with you, see. Bailey's up there with Tom Kennedy being underrated. It's just about getting a second show that can also show off what he could do. He never got that with Who's Still Standing.
Exactly. You don't want to be, you don't, I mean, because with game shows, it's a show and not an advertisement, but you don't want to be Flo the Progressive Girl stuck there. As much as she makes $1.5 million a year, she hates the commercials. You want to expand your career a little bit. And that's not a mark on Ben Bailey, but you know, you just hope he gets more opportunities to shine. And I mean that positively. Where people could give him that.
I mean, come on, GSA. Give him another show.
Give him a show. Come on.
But yeah. I don't think they're going to change they're not going to change the format at all. What you see on the Discovery version is what you're going to see here. And that's just perfect.
Mm.
I will say that I find it interesting about Cash Cab and what they're doing with Bravo. Bravo is starting to get into the game because they kind of have space in the schedule that they need to fill. The one can't live off of Real Housewives and Lisa Vanderpump all the time.
No, there's only so far that can realistically go. And that's what game shows have historically always been very good for in a pinch these days, because they don't have much upfront costs, and they get decent viewers. So, mm-hmm. Thank goodness for that. And thankfully, it's something that we all, mostly everyone at American here knows and loves pretty well, so.
Absolutely. And I could, now let me tell you about, we'll continue on with Blind Date. What they have here in the Variety article that it's going to update the show for 2019 with social media trends and diverse couples of all ethnicities, ages, and sexual orientations. Hmm. So we're going to get a hot cougar on cub action.
This could be something. I mean, yeah, that's certainly one way to get the eyeballs by making it kind of interesting like that for sure.
Yeah, I think this is a trend that we saw, which I'm going to say the show that really brought dating shows into the 2010s, and that was Baggage. That was the first show that introduced these cougar cub reactions and a lot of these mixed ethnicities, ages, sexual orientation sort of thing. It launched that in the 2010s.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of what this could launch. I mean, well, I guess we'll see, but, like, there's certainly a launching point for these things, kind of like a trampoline.
Mm-hmm. And if this takes off, I have a feeling we're going to get a renaissance of some of these 90s and 2000s shows back.
I mean, that's what's due, right? I mean, yeah. Basically, everything comes back after, like, 20 years. Like, people were saying that that's the case now, yeah, because we have more channels. But back in the days, you had stuff like The Wonder Years that for a non-game show that certainly was appealing to that boomer demographic of the Brady Bunch stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. Why not?
And honestly, with me, I think this would be a good home. I know Street Smarts is trying to get revived. This would be a perfect home for that.
Yeah. Street Smarts would be amazing in 2019. I mean, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think it translates even better now than it did back in the day. There aren't many shows I would say that for. But Street Smarts is very, very high on that list.
Absolutely. And Frank is all for it. He wants to do it. I assume that Scott St. John wants to do it. He owns the show.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure, heck, if not Bravo, Game Show Network would be happy to have it for one simple reason. It's one of those shows that you can turn on and you don't have to pay attention to.
True.
And if you think about it, that kind of makes the best game show, so to speak.
Well, the moments of the game show work, though. I mean, that's just it. Because we like to see, at least as I've described it, we like to see natural people in the most extraordinary of circumstances, though. That's what makes, I think, as I do my film stuff in my own time, that's what makes good film, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You see people usually, I mean, there's some exceptions to this. Like, I love the movie Boyhood, but that's obviously not really extraordinary circumstances. But in most cases, it is someone who's in a circumstance that they wouldn't otherwise be in, and you see it unfold from there. So, mm-hmm. Except this is real life, because what, in the weird way that game shows are, I guess. But it makes it fascinating.
And plus, he doesn't love people acting like idiots on national TV.
Yeah, that can happen too. And obviously, the opposite applies too. People absolutely destroying it on TV. Like, yeah, like those are. I mean, it's the horseshoe theory in action too, right? Because as much as they're opposite, there's certainly some similarities and overlap.
Yep, it's kind of interesting that we got from Cash Cab to this whole Bravo new wave of programming that they're doing. And I think it's for the best. I think diversification is good nowadays.
Yeah, and I have no reason to think it would stop doing this either. I mean, as much as TV's a dying medium, you have to try to reach out into new markets that you haven't before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really just the tip of the iceberg. Not necessarily with Bravo here, but this kind of action necessarily. And this is an example of it.
Yep. And Blind Date is that type of show where you could tweet along with it and, you know, be fun with it. It's something similar to what E! Has done with Dating No Filter.
Yeah. That's why the dating shows are probably going to be possible to have more, as you've said before, in the coming years. They're especially low cost. They're an easy way to get eyes, especially if there's drama, and it wouldn't be manufactured because it's dating. So why not?
Right.
So let's go on social media.
That means we could honestly see a return of one of my favorite guilty pleasures of all time.
I don't.
Studs.
Oh, jeez. I mean, someone probably would. I mean, if I'm a producer, why not?
And it's dirt cheap, too.
Yeah, that's why it works.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also why I think, it's why I'm also a bit disappointed that Baggage is no longer on the air, on GSN.
That's a GSN problem, though. They don't have enough long enough leases for even their shows that they find success with, but that's just me.
Yeah, but the thing is, they own the show.
Yeah, they own the show. I don't understand it either. I think they should, and not just because I like the show, because I do, but they really should have done more with the chase. Even if you had to lower the amounts down, it was getting very good ratings for an original.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you renew it and have, like, 1,000 a question.
Yeah.
Like the UK show, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't do that or do what Australia eventually did with 2,000 a question. Either way, it's fine. But it made it very viable.
Well, I think that's going to put a bow on this edition of the Gumbo Cast. Any parting words, Jessica?
Surprisingly, no. For once, you found something to keep me relatively silent on.
Well, we'll let Jessica go back into her den of stats and strats for another couple of weeks. She'll come out with more information that will help better your game-playing life. And she'll also come out and probably kick my ass in Luck of the Draw. God, I hope not.
Oh, I wish you luck in that. It's going to be fun. Go to twitch.tv/Lugaroo. You know where Tim's at, y'all. If you watch this, you probably do. But if not, join his Discord. He'll link to the right way.
Yep. Or join the game. Join our Discord, which will be rebranded. It's Game Show. It's the Game Show Garbage Discord, but we will be rebranding come October to be Game Show Gumbo. Rebranding is always fun, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I'm trying to work on that myself for a few different projects I've been working on. So far, so good from what I've been learning. Haven't had a chance to applicate it yet, though.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for me. And for next time, we'll see you next time here on the GumboCast.